And here we are once again assembled around the warmth of our digital screens to listen to another AEW Dynamite review here on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show. Hello, I'm Mr. Warren Hayes. Very nice to see you. Welcome. Here we are once again, whether you're watching this on YouTube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes or on your favorite podcast application. Thank you, by the way. Had the whole Spotify unwrap thing for my podcast. I don't want to hammer it home too much. Not too much. But it was released yesterday and I did, you know, talk about it on whatever socials I have left. And I was very humbled. I'm very proud of how the podcast grew this year. But I'm also very thankful for all of you for tuning in, for listening, for watching, and allowing me and my own, you know, specific brand of analysis to infect your brain and your own enjoyment of pro wrestling. Thank you. But seriously, you know, I'm doing the jokes here, but I am sincerely, deeply thankful and humbled. And that so many of you, you know, had my podcast be in your top 10 most listened, your top 5. And I'm like, what? Okay. But, you know, I do legitimately believe and think that I am a D-list podcaster. So whenever this kind of stuff pops up and, you know, it does prop you up. And it doesn't take much, you know, as someone who creates content or podcasts or writes, it doesn't take much sometimes to just like throw you a curve not throw you a curve, but make you reignite, you know, what you're doing. Show that there is some purpose, that there is an audience, that you're not just like screaming into nothingness. That's very nice. And I appreciate it. And I appreciate you. So thank you again. And, you know, since we're all on this appreciation kick here, why don't you leave a like on this video if you're watching on YouTube, or a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and a 5-star rating on Spotify. This guy, he never stops asking us for shit, right? You didn't come here to listen to me gush, you know, and I'll probably do this a little more extensively on the podcast this week, on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show, next week, I should say. But as it stands right now, this is very cool that we're getting around to talk about Dynamite, one that was promised to restore the feeling. We're talking specifically about the November 29 edition of Dynamite. MJF had tweeted that out earlier in the day, you know, that he was, you know, he's battling multiple injuries and whatnot, and he said, let's restore the feeling. Was the feeling restored? I gotta tell you, this is by far my favorite Dynamite in a long time, in a couple of months. Like, legitimately, I thought this was a tremendous episode of Dynamite. I don't have many quibbles about it, and that also feels good. And it did feel like a Dynamite, and I feel like it's reigniting people, at least in the, you know, in my circles and people that I hang out with. There is a consensus that this felt good. This did not feel like a Frankenstein construction of sports entertainment and wrestling. That it was a significant return to form. And if this is because CM Punk showed up on Raw this week and that he's joining the WWE roster, you know, good! It's fine! And I don't have an issue with this. And this is what a wrestling war should look like. You should have people bouncing around from promotion to promotion, big time names, forcing the other guys to step up their act. So if this was a way to counteract that, to be like, look, we can still be great without, you know, Phil Brooks and his bland, dead-eyed promo on Monday. We can still be better than him. We don't need him. If this was a rallying cry for the fans, for the audience, for the boys and girls backstage, good! CM Punk should join WWE every week then. If this is Tony Khan who is reacting got to by Punk showing up on Monday, Again, good. There is no net negative here. This show was tremendous. I enjoyed it. I got excited about it. I got excited for a Dynamite. I got excited to sit down here and do this for the first time in a while, where I don't feel like we have to wade through some muck to get to the good stuff. There's no horse pucky here. There's a couple of things where I'm like, eh. But overall, I thought this was a, once again, tremendous episode. And if this is indeed, you know, part of restoring the feeling, I'm into it. Like, this is the AEW that I know, that I tune into. This feels different from the other guys. This feels like the alternative. We're not drowning in all sorts of directions. There's something that happened with this episode. Now, the question, and I think this is a legitimate, maybe not a question, but I'm going to keep this at arm's length none the way. I'm not going to jump in here and say unironically, AEW is back, baby. You know, it's not going to be any of that. But I'm going to keep this at arm's length because, and I think this is legitimate to feel this way, to be a little apprehensive. I need to see a pattern. I need to see not just 1 week, because if it's just Tony Khan reacting this 1 week, while this was a tremendous episode, I want to see if this carries over into multiple weeks, into the new year, into, you know, past, leading us into World's End and then beyond. Because there's one thing that AEW has expended, at least for me, is a lot of goodwill, especially when it comes to its planning and its foresight and how things keep moving forward. So I'm not convinced, and I don't feel like I should sit here and celebrate and say we are back in form AEW. This was an AEW show. Will this format, will this feeling that has been restored, will it continue? Will this feeling truly be restored by multiple weeks of these types of Dynamites? Dynamites that make us remember how great AEW is, that remind us that this is an alternative, that this is what North American pro wrestling needs, an alternative to the other guys. If they're able to maintain this over multiple weeks, then yeah, I will sit back down here and I will tell you, I think the feeling has been restored. As it stands right now, this is a great first step out the gate to restoring this feeling. That is without question to me. But do we stumble out the gate, or do we take more steps, and do the steps become a steady jog into a trot? And then do we start galloping back into what we were? That's what we have to keep an eye out for. But I don't have many qualms. Look, I don't even want to spend much time on the business aspect of it. Although I do want to underscore this, right? For this show here, Minneapolis, Minnesota. It's the tiny Minnesota is what Minnesota is. Minneapolis, Minnesota, the Target Center. According to WrestleTix, of course, all this data, 4,648 tickets distributed. This would be the lowest TV taping Dynamite has recorded in this market in its entire history of going to Minneapolis, which is a great wrestling town. And it is an above average number for AEW here, but not gonna lie, I think look, again, it's still not great. It's better, but it's still not great. And it is, like I said, the lowest attended taping. They went to the Target Center for a Rampage in 2021. For a Rampage! That did 5,905 people. They almost got to 6,000 people for an edition of Rampage. They went back in 2022, 5,562 for a Dynamite. Again, in both these venues, right? Both in the Target Center. So this, you know, 4,648, it's 1,000 people less, just about, than the last time they were here. So we're not out of the woods yet. And of course, there was Full Gear 2 years ago, which did 10,000 plus. Again, in the Target Center. So, I mean, it's not a disaster number, but again, historically, in this, here's the thing. When we tell you the product doesn't feel as hot, and when we go back to the markets and we do these comparisons, a lot of times people will come back to me and they say, well, Warren, you know, the more you go back to a market, the less people are going to go. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. And it's unsustainable. And that's not how live events work. And if that were the case, there would not be a live event business. Like, that doesn't make any fucking sense. But, you know, you have to consider here, what you do have to consider here is that between, they've been here annually. It's not as if they're running the territory into the ground. They've been here every year. Only the Target Center on an annual basis. So when the promotion was going well, 5,905 for the Rampage, 5,562 the next year for Dynamite. There is a drop, 400 people. But you could argue that the product was still hot. Now that the product is not hot, we've dropped 1,000 people in attendance, or at least tickets distributed, right? 1K. Or just about, just shy of. I mean, that's a bigger drop than 400 people or 350, whatever. That's a much more significant drop and is indicative that the product does not feel hot. You have a hot product and it goes back and it keeps it. You will fill these arenas and people will buy your tickets at whatever price you're selling them if your product is hot. I can't hammer this enough that I sincerely believe this. If your product is hot, people will pay for tickets. I have never seen, the minute people start going, oh, it feels a little too expensive, then that means, that is an indication that your product is not as hot as it could be. No one, back when iPhones first came out, iPhone 2 and 3 and whatnot, no one was saying, man, wish those iPhones were cheaper, I'd get one. People were saying, I am going to save money to get one of these, you know, beautiful engines of, you know, social development and amazing technology that makes me feel like I'm in Star Trek. That's just how it goes. And Apple doesn't do sales either, very seldom. And when their sales are like 5% off, 10% off, you're like, Jesus, oh, this is a sale? Because their products are still coveted. They're still hot. Anyway, I didn't want to get into this. I really didn't. I went off on a sidebar here. Point is, lowest attended taping in the Target Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota, since AEW, in the history of AEW in this market. Should we start talking about the Continental Classic? Let's do that. I think, you know, it was the focus of the show last night, and I loved it. I want more of this. And this is what I want. The last night was an expression of what I want in regards to the Continental Classic. This is what I want. I'm not even bullshitting you here. But let's start with the league standings right now. Well, the results from last night. We'll just go through everything here. John Moxley defeated Jay Lethal in a tremendous match. I thought this was very good. Like, legitimately very good. You know, both guys grappling, pulling out the wrestling stuff, and a dive to the floor compromises John Moxley's knee, and Jay Lethal is all over it, right? Mox mounts a comeback at some point with a cutter and a King Kong lariat, but Lethal uses the leg disadvantage, like he's not letting go of the leg, clips it, figure fours, all that stuff. Mox fights out of a later figure four, lands the Death Rider, the King Kong Lariat, a pile driver, covers Lethal, who kicks out, but Mox just like instantly locks in the Bulldog Choke. By the way, Bryan Danielson was on hand to add color commentary to each of these matches, to each of the league matches, which I thought added a great amount of sports feel to it. Danielson was putting people over and whatnot, and I thought this was really great. I hope they do the same type of thing for the Blue League, because I thought the Gold League matches felt very, very elevated. So Moxley got another three points. He is at 6 points. The other Continental Classic match that we had was Mark Briscoe versus Roosh, which I thought was tremendous as well. And I'm debating as to whether I liked it more than the Mox Lethal match, because this is what was crucial here. And it was the thing that was in the back of my mind when it started, and the guys just proved me right here. Briscoe, Roosh had to come out here with a sense of urgency, because they both lost their opening matches. They were both at they both had the goose egg coming into this match. So with just a few matches, right? There's only 5 matches per guy, and we're already at the second one. If they don't score here, the uphill climb becomes much more treacherous, right? So this is the situation that we had here, and they played into it. This was a rugged, hard-hitting, physical, urgent match that two guys with losses, with no points in the tournament, should be having. Roosh has his leg worked over. Tremendous spear by Briscoe as he interrupts Roosh doing the bull rush thing. Just awesome stuff. Roosh belly to bellies Briscoe off the apron to the floor, and I'm like, Mark, Jesus Christ. He lands the froggy elbow. Roosh has to pummel Briscoe into the corner to keep him down, and then finally lands the corner dropkick thing for the win. So Roosh up on the board with 3 points. Mark Briscoe still at 0 in a great match. And I was looking at the cage match results for these matches here. 6.78 for Moxley and Jay Lethal. I'm like, really? I gave Mox versus Lethal 3.75. And I gave Roosh and Mark Briscoe 4. I thought these matches ruled. And Roosh and Briscoe did score higher, 7.52. But because it felt like a fucking tournament match. It felt like I said, two guys who have to get on the board. This is how they're supposed to act. You know, and credit to Danielson during the Jay Lethal match, he was putting over the idea that, you know, Lethal came to play. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to quote the Miz's theme song here, but he did come to fight, and he was bringing it in, and Danielson was like, yeah, this is the Jay Lethal we have to see. Although Jay Lethal is absolutely in the, he's the Chase Owens of the tournament. He's the Chase Owens of the tournament here. Maybe the Yoshihashi of the tournament more than the Chase Owens. Because Yoshihashi in the G1s, in the G1 climax, he can turn out some great matches with people and eat the L's, and no one really blinks an eye. Maybe that's a fairer comparison than Chase Owens, who, you know, Chase is, you know, Chase had that one good, that one good G1 where I thought he worked really hard, but then, anyway. That's a whole other discussion. Let's keep this on track, Warren. But I feel like I'm just looking at the ratings on Cage Match for this entire show. Actually, I'm like, it's a little odd. Everything feels off to me. Like Mox and Lethal is it because of Jay Lethal? Because I know Jay Lethal is not a necessarily well liked individual. Is it because of that we're at 6.8? I don't know. Look, let's keep. We'll keep talking about the Continental Classic, the main event. The main event, though. Jay White versus Swerve. I gave this 4.25. God damn, this ruled. What do they have it at Cage Match? 8.12. which seems about right to, seems about in accordance here. Good, gritty, hard, violent, you know, and as opposed to, and it's kind of the mirror of what Briscoe and Roosh had to be. These are two guys with 3 points. So whoever comes out of this come, you know, will have an advantage over the other guy who is also positioned to move forward. But there's also this this idea of tiebreakers and whatnot. So listen, I'm going off track. That sounded a little rambling here, but there's this tremendous sequence by Swerve Strickland. I'm telling you, nobody in this company wrestles like that guy. And I'm glad that Tony Khan is giving him the ball. He's giving him the push. Swerve is gobbling up every single minute he has with this push. He's hanging on. He's clasping on to it. He's, as they like to say, grabbing it by the throat. And it's tremendous. And he, a lot of people are starting to see what I saw, and that is top guy material. And I think he always has been. And if there is one guy who has, whose ceiling has always been world champion, it's him. But there's a lot more people who are seeing it now because he's getting the push. But not only is he getting the push, but he's working for the push at the same time. It's a credible push. It's not like just pushing someone because you want to push them. It's pushing them, but that person is delivering on the work. And this match here, he delivered and over-delivered. And don't get me wrong. He's got Jay White here, a penultimate pro. A guy who I've been a fan of, for a few years now, who won me over because, anyway, we're not getting into that, but that I'm a huge fan of, a guy who was protected in this company. This is only his second straight singles loss here, which should tell you something about the Swerve Strickland push, by the way. But again, I'm getting ahead of myself. Jay was tremendous here as well, just leaning into the brutality of it. His chops were just all on point, just smacking Swerve around. Swerve does the arm snap that Excalibur, I think, obliquely referred to as kill shot. Of course, his Lucha Underground persona. And Swerve avoids a low blow from White. Does the Swerve stomp, but Jay White kicks out in a moment that I bit. Then we get the 5 minute count. 5 minutes. And I'm like, fuck. This is going to a draw, isn't it? We're going to time in here, but we didn't. White lands the Blade Runner. Swerve rolls to the ropes. White is like, and he tries to drag him back in, but he can't get the pin. But it's a little thing here. But if you go back and watch this match, and it's a tiny thing, but it's the kind of shit that makes me pop. Jay White is dragging, you know, after hitting his finisher, he's dragging Swerve into the ring, and he's trying, you know, to pin him, to do the usual thing where the guy who hits the finisher is like, fuck, and then he drags him back in. There's enough time that passes for the opponent to regain energy. We've all seen this trope. And he's dragging him back in to try and pin him. And Swerve, instead of just like flopping onto his back, Swerve is resisting. He's like, no, like he turns, he presents his back instead of his torso. So he's like, ugh. And Jay has to work to just get him on his back. And it's a tiny thing that they were doing here, but it added so much to this finish where I was like, this is great. This is what I do. My instincts are kicking in. No, I can't be pinned here. Look, tiny little thing, but I loved it. And then, Swerve sets he gets a tremendous slick win here. Look, there's so many things that worked in this match. Right now, this is the best match of this tournament. Like, bar none. I don't even think this is arguable at this point. I don't think you can make a case for anything we saw on Collision or... And as much as I liked Eddie versus Brody King, there's nothing that happened on Collision or Dynamite last week that that can rival this so far. This is the match of the tournament. But no, make no qualms, two smart, cerebral type wrestlers going after each other, competent, super, super competent pro wrestlers who understand it, who understand the business, who understand how to make a match, who understand how to tell a story in a goddamn match. Because the story here was like, again, two super smart guys who absolutely need to score 3 points to not fall behind. We want to keep the lead, right? Or stay in conversation of being in the lead of the block. So, look, absolutely tremendous stuff. And like I mentioned, don't lose sight of the fact that Swerve Strickland got a pin over super protected Jay White. I would not be surprised moving forward that Jay White doesn't eat another single pin. Let me take a look at the graphic here. Who's Jay got left? Well, Jay does have John Moxley left, right? He got the win over Rouge. He's got Mark Briscoe and Jay Lethal yet. Jay White is not losing to Jay Lethal. He's not losing to Mark Briscoe. He probably will lose to Mox. I'll explain this in a second. But super protected since his arrival in AEW. We can argue as to whether it was it was good or not, the way his arrival was handled. That's an entirely different discussion. But observably, this is his second straight pinfall loss. His second straight pinfall loss, right? That's what I said. Just, you know, not in a tag team, no shenanigans, like just... And I think this is significant. And I think this is significant to Swerve's push. And I think this is where we're going here. I think this is a significant moment. If I, you know, again, maybe I'm applying a little too much G1, you know, too many G1 reflex thoughts here. And we really don't know Tony Khan's, as opposed to Tony Khan booking this tournament for the first time and Gedo booking... had been booking G1s for years now. We can see the Gedo booking patterns here. So I don't know what the TK booking patterns look like. But if you ask me right now, if you look at the standings with John Moxley and Swerve Strickland, two victories, no losses, 6 points apiece at the top. Tied for second place are Jay White and Roosh, both 1-1 at 3 points, and Mark Briscoe and Jay Lethal running up the bottom at 0 points and two losses apiece. I think the finals, or at least the last match of the Continental Classic, of the regular round robin, is going to be John Moxley and Swerve. I think this is the path we're going down. Two guys coming up at the end of the block, undefeated, and one of these two has to get it. Or one of these guys loses. Or one of these guys loses a match, but then we end up with Moxley and Swerve. Let's say Swerve is at how many points is this going to make? 3, 6, 12, 15. Okay, so Mox is at 15, Swerve is at 12, but then Mox is Swerve's final battle. He's the final guy on the last night of round robin competition. Swerve wins, ties Mox at 15, or at 12, I should say. Yeah, ties Mox at 12. I'm all confused. Let me... 15 is going to be like a perfect run, Warren. Thank you. If John comes in at 12, he won all four of his previous matches. Swerve comes in at 9. He won 3, dropped 1, let's say. He comes in and he defeats Mox. He ties Mox at 12. But since Swerve has the tiebreaker over Mox, Swerve wins the block. You see what I mean here? But I don't even think... So I think that's where we're going here with Swerve Strickland getting the big... Getting the big push here. The more things are going, and we'll talk about this again, but I think Swerve is the odds-on favorite to win this tournament. with the way things are being set right now, the way they're talking about Swerve, the way, look, beating Jay White, I do not lose sight of this victory for Swerve. I think it is meaningful. I believe so. And I think he's going to win the block. Now, they did say that there was going to be semifinals and finals, right? I don't think there's real clarity on the semifinals as to what they're going to do. And I know a lot of people are saying, oh, well, they'll have number one and number two fight again, which doesn't make sense because technically speaking, if it's booked right anyway, your final match of the block as opposed to the block finals, but the final night of the block will be those two people. Already. So do you rerun that match immediately as the semifinals? No, it doesn't make sense. I think if they're doing semis, it will be Gold League winner versus Blue League runner-up and Blue League winner versus Gold League runner-up because you keep everything fresh. Otherwise, you're retreading a match that we just saw in the tournament and that's malpractice. That stinks. And yes, it's very much the G1 way of doing things, but I think it is the most efficient, it's the smartest, it's the easiest one to wrap your head around. You do win tiebreakers to decide who moves forward if you have people with the same with the same total points. And I've seen such complex situations, and it's like, well, maybe there'd be another match, and and you could get all these people in here in a three-way, and I'm like, you have to keep this to its most simplest procedure. It's a tournament. We don't know about the tiebreakers. We don't know the setup of the finals. And if we saw the schedule, if we actually saw the schedule, it would probably help us to have a better vision of how this tournament is going to shake out. I'm sure, I don't want to say I'm convinced or I'm sure, but I feel like your big match for Gold League is Mox versus Swerve, and that's going to be on the final night of block action to determine. It'll probably be one of the two who are going to move to the semis. It's going to be those two, I believe, that are going to move on to the semis. In which capacity, that will be another discussion to have. But I'm excited to see how this is going to go. Things are looking dire for Mark Briscoe and Jay Lethal, of course, because they only have three matches left. Like, that's the thing. It's like, we only have five matches. This isn't a block of eight people or 10. So we only have three matches left in Gold League. So Briscoe and Lethal, to really stay in the conversation, have to win their next three matches if they really want to have, not just stay in the conversation, if they want to have a chance. Because the minute Moxley and or Strickland hit nine, we're going to have to start talking about eliminations. Like, if next week John Moxley, this is a scenario, just a hypothetical, if John Moxley wins his if both John Moxley and Swerve Strickland win their matches and they're both at 9 points and Mark Briscoe and Jay Lethal lose their matches, their tournament's done. Their tournament is officially done because they will only have the possibility of scoring 6 points overall. Whereas Mox and Strickland will both be at 9. It'll be impossible for them to catch up. But we'll see what happens next week. Like, there is a chance next week that we'll be calling some eliminations. I think Briscoe and Lethal, let's see who they have left. Mark Briscoe has Swerve left. He's got Lethal and he's got White. So, one of these two guys, Briscoe and Lethal, is going to finish with 3 points or in a draw. At least, bare minimum, 1 point, right? One of these two. Mark Briscoe defeating Swerve, I don't see it unless we want to start going down the upset route. We'll see. And defeating Jay White, Mark Briscoe, I don't think so either. And I don't think Lethal has Roosh, and Jay White as well. And I don't see Lethal getting wins over either of those guys. Are we predicting that these two are going to be eliminated? I could predict it. I think this is what's going to happen, but we'll see what kind of situation unfurls next week, and then we'll do things officially. But I'm pretty sure Mark Briscoe and Jay Lethal's tournament is starting to feel like the end. One last note before we move on to the rest of the card. I like this tournament. I like this night of the tournament the best so far. And this is what I was talking about, I believe, on the Collision Review. And I was talking on the Mr. Warren Hayes Show this week as well, if you want to listen to that. The G1 climax in New Japan feels big and important and significant for wrestling fans who are into it, of course. Not because it's a tournament and people like... It's because the quality of the matches have made this... elevated the tournament into something special. And I said last week, if the Continental Classic, if the C2 stays on the level of matches that we got both in Gold and Blue League last week, we're not going to sit here in reverence in this tournament. We're not going to sit here and say, wow, this was tremendous. I can't wait for next year's edition, because they all feel like Dynamite matches. You know, they just feel like run-of-the-mill television matches. They have to feel special. This, on this tournament night here, on night two of Gold League, I guess, I thought all the matches felt special. They all felt important. They felt crucial to the, two of the matches felt crucial for the guys involved in it. This is how I'm supposed to feel in watching a round-robin tournament in pro wrestling. This is it. This is how I should... So if this feeling, this energy, this momentum, dare I say, if it can carry over into Blue League and into the next few weeks, I'm down for it. I'm completely okay for it. Let's go. But we're much closer to it. We're not comparing this to the 2000 to the mid 2010s G1s here. This is not what I'm doing, because we're a league away from that, but it's still much more captivating. Like this week, I'm into it. I can't wait to talk more about it. How are we doing on time? Okay. We got enough time to go through the rest of the show here. We've already talked about the Continental Classic matches, so Moxley, Lethal, we covered that. After the match, as we mentioned, Bryan Danielson's on commentary, of course, and we cut to a Collision, a promo that Eddie Kingston pre-taped after his Collision loss to Brody King. He said, oh, you know, maybe I'm too cocky, too arrogant, you know, putting my belts up, you know, like I deserve to win it. But, you know, he's fighting Danielson next week on Collision. And, you know, he feels like he's behind the eight ball, I think is what he said. And he said, you know, humble in victory, humble in defeat. Right. And then they cut to Danielson, where Excalibur's like, you know, who's still at commentary. And Excalibur's like, Brian, do you have, would you like to react to this? Danielson just like, he just goes off on him and is like, you know, brother, you know, you've got an owie. I fractured my orbital bone and I'm ready to go, you know, kind of thing. And he said, you know, I'm coming in hot and I will not be humble. So I'm like, let's go. Now this feels fun. Now we're into something. Now I feel we have the focus on the Continental Classic that it deserves. I'm getting hyped for it. I want to see this match. I want to see how this is going to go, how Eddie's going to deal with another loss. Cause you got to expect that, right? Look, I'm excited. This is good. It's good stuff. Then we got the Sting and Ric Flair segment backstage with Tony Schiavone. It, you know, as a guy who did watch a substantial amount of WCW, at the very least, live back in the day, there was something tremendously unreal of being in the year 2023, what, 30 years removed from all this, from the Monday Night Wars and all that other bullshit, and seeing Tony Schiavone, Ric Flair, and Sting on my television There was something a little unreal about it. Something like, this is crazy. And, you know, Ric Flair is, you know, whatever shape he's in these, you know, whatever shape he's in 2023, Jesus Christ. But Shivani, you know, fantastic. He's on, I don't think he's ever been better. And Sting, I don't, you know, tremendous final run. Anyway, it's the announcement that Revolution is going to be at the Greensboro Arena, which is tremendous. So look, let me flip this around. Let me get to the quibble, and then we'll end it with a nice note, this segment here. My quibble here is Ric Flair. I am not a fan of 2023 Ric Flair for multiple reasons, and I don't really see what he brings, what value he truly brings to cutting promos and whatnot. There's a bunch, there's a segment of this promo where he's just garbling. I don't understand what he's saying. But, you know, he's an old guy. And, you know, we're starting, for me, I'm in Kaiji Mudo territory where I feel he's overstaying his welcome. And let the memories alone. And if I want to, I don't need 2023 Ric Flair to create new memories for me. He won't be able. He'll just, at the very least, it'll just end up me having to put caveats every time I talk about him. I was like, yeah, Ric Flair, one of the greats, but Jesus, those final years, right? Which is kind of what everyone does with Kaiji Muto as well, where unquestionably one of the all-time greats, but his final couple of years in Noah, you're like, fuck, man, what are we doing here? So that's kind of what I feel like here. And he does nothing for me, despite the fact, and I know, you know, I know, and I sat here and told you all that I'm glad they found a place to include Ric Flair into Sting's retirement because their history is so intrinsically entwined that it's hard to say goodbye to Sting without having Ric Flair involved in some former capacity. But this is not Ric Flair's retirement tour. This is Sting's. And I'm sure Sting is grateful and thankful that his buddy Rick is there and that they're going to ride off into the sunset. He's going to ride off into the sunset with Rick by his side. I'm sure. But I don't want to lose direction here and suddenly see this as, you know, Ric Flair getting one more shot, one more moment, one more, because he had his thing. He did the Jim Crockett promotion revival with you know, Conrad the Mortgage Man, and we're good. That's fine. This truly is Sting's moment. So that irks me a little bit. Not that anything he said was egregious or that he was putting himself over. No, he even put Sting over and said, you know, I didn't make Sting. Sting made himself. Like, it's fine, you know. But he's not shying away from the limelight. He's not saying, oh, no, 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 I should not be in the spotlight here. No, no, no. He's still gobbling it up. Little cloud goblin that he is. Got to sell those energy drinks. Hey, did you know that a case of these fucking, like, a six pack of these fucking drinks is $30? His mushroom leaf, whatever the fuck, energy drinks are $30. Anyway. But I want to finish this on a nice thought instead of just leaving this hang as a... the Greensboro Revolution happening at the Greensboro Arena is a tremendous move. An important building in pro wrestling. Even talked about Mid-Atlantic. Yeah, they just dropped that yesterday. I was like, all right. Historically significant, a huge, tremendous venue in the history of pro wrestling. And as they mentioned, well, I think they were oblique about it, but just to be sure that we're clear, this is the clash of the clash of the champions happened. The 45-minute draw between Sting and Ric Flair that they were referencing. I don't know if it's clear that's the building in which it happened, right? So, I mean, it's tremendous that we're going back to this and that Sting will leave in the building that he will exit the company in the building in which that not the company, the business. He will exit the business in the building that made him into a figure, an icon, as they like to call it. And for the record, I know a lot of people are throwing all sorts of scenarios out there, right? Because I think a lot of fans, a lot of pundits just want to throw the wackiest shit out there so that when it happens, they go like, hey, I told you so. Whereas, look, it has to be Darby and Sting is going to lose because Sting is going to do business the right way. He's going to retire. He's going to put someone over and it's got to be Darby. It has to be Darby. This is the match. This is what they were building for, right? And Sting has never lost a match in AEW, right? Isn't that what they were saying? So there you go. His one loss in his career in AEW is going to be against Darby Allin. It has to be. And it's going to be a nice, respectful match. No, oh, he's going to turn. You don't need this kind of bullshit. You don't. See, this is the kind of poison we don't need in AEW and that was absent from last night. Where it's like, all right, instead of creating stories as, oh, well, maybe, you know, Darby will turn on Sting. He doesn't need to turn on Sting. Sting just has to ask Darby, will you give me the honor of being my final opponent? And Darby is gonna cry, and everyone's gonna cry, and Ric Flair's gonna cry, and it's gonna be a tremendous moment. Like it doesn't have to be more complicated than that. And you know what? Not only does it not have to be, it shouldn't. It's so simple at this point. Just keep it level, and it'll be a tremendous moment, and everyone is gonna be thrilled. So, bleh. Then we had Roosh versus Mark Briscoe for the Gold League. Then we had, after that, which we already spoke of, RJ City does some Tony Storm stuff. I kind of zone out. She was talking about John F. Kennedy, right? Then we get the MJF promo where he hits the ring. He still has his cane for his hip. He puts Joe over as a trailblazer, right? Said Joe might have looked unconventional in pro wrestling back in the old TNA days, but he didn't care. Neither did Joe, because once he hit the ring, we knew Samoa Joe was the baddest man walking on God's green earth. I'm still waiting for Max to use God's green flat earth. The next wrestler you hear say God's green flat earth, you'll know will be a listener of the Mr. Warren Hayes Show. And he says, Max continues by saying, unfortunately, later on in his career, he wasn't offered the same type of opportunities to be a world champion. And he names WWE specifically to tremendous boos from the audience. He said, but what Joe did for pro wrestling was bigger than all of that. Prove that you don't need to be a bodybuilder to be a top guy in this sport. Joe broke the mold. Proved alternatives matter, and because of the road he paved, and I was sure he was going to say AEW, places like AEW can thrive, and I was like, but then he says, MJF can stand before you today. He said, because of what Joe did, MJF has a spot, and I'm like, wait a minute. What, really? Why? What? Don't get me wrong, like, I know MJF, if MJF had come up in the 90s, he would have immediately been called too short, for sure. Like, that would have been an issue where people are like, I can't use you, you're too short. But MJF has a great physique, and he is a handsome man, and he is charismatic, and he can talk, and I think it is a very strange comparison. I think it's a weird comp, where Samoa Joe did in fact not fit the WWE. You know, what did Max call it? The male model body? You know, he didn't fit the mold at all. Despite looking like a pro wrestler, regardless if you've watched any type of pro wrestling outside of the Fed. But I know what he means. But I'm like, how did Samoa Joe contribute to MJF being able to do this today? Because, look, if MJF was, a big guy, not well defined, looking soft, but still nonetheless very hard. Try not to say the word fat, but you know what I mean. Then I'd be like, yeah, sure. But I don't know. It's a weird comp, especially when I thought when he used the word alternative, I thought he was going to specifically drop All Elite Wrestling, but he didn't. But he did talk about AEW, got people to chant the name. Like it was on one hand, I thought this was well done, even though maybe it's not one of Max's greatest promos. But I think this was well done because it was one part advancing his story with Samoa Joe to the World's End thing. Make sure that and this whole dynamic that they have where Joe's going to protect him to make sure that he's healed up in time for World's End. And it's a combination of that and a rah-rah speech, which I think a lot of fans needed. Very subtle, though. I don't think it was an outright AEW is the best, fuck the rest kind of scenario here. But it did have rah-rah speech. A rah-rah speech feel to it. Anyway, all this was going great until the lights went out. No, before that, he hypes up the match. On top of that, the World's End match. Talks about his injuries. Highlights them, the hip, the shoulder, the torn labrum that apparently he's torn again. This is something that's happened to him. And our boy is banged up. We'll see what happens moving forward here. But MJF right now, he's far from 100%. So we'll see how things go. Then the lights go out and the devil's putties attack. And Joe throws them out. He runs down and he's got a bat and he throws them out. Because like he said, you're my property now, Max. And I'm going to make sure that nothing bad happens to you. And then on screen, we have the ghost from PBS Kids show Ghost Rider appear. Remember that? And Ghost Rider challenged. Shout out Fred Moreland. He challenged Max and Joe to a tag match next week, to which Max accepts to Joe's dismay. Joe was like, no, don't do this, you moron. I want to keep you fresh. So, yeah, outside of that, which I thought was clunky and odd, and ultimately not really compelling, I thought this was good. Again, not one of Max's greatest promos, but a lot of people are poo-pooing on it. Well, I think I was like, no, this is actually pretty successful. I kind of like it. Anyway, now we have commentary saying that on top of that, to justify this, that, our IT security guys are on the case. We, apparently this is an inside job because they have control of the light board and the, the truck, the production truck. They can hack into it. So our IT security guys are on him. Like, come on. What are we doing here? I don't know. Wardlow defeated AR Fox. Not exactly a squash, but not exactly the most competitive match either. We get a bunch of power bombs by Wardlow and a last ride. Ref stops the match. This is his thing now. Action Andretti and Top Flight. The returning Dante Martin defeat the Hardys and Isaiah Cassidy. Brother Zay, right? I thought this was tremendous. I thought this was a whole lot of fun. And I actually want more of this. And if this is... Look, I was very apprehensive about this match because Hardy's 2023, it is what it is. But Brother Zay is doing a lot of the carrying for this trio. And the other young guys are super hungry. And this was real good with some great spots. Like, this was your high-flying spot fest, and it delivered. It was tremendous, and it kind of, we're talking about restoring the feeling. This kind of felt like this, this kind of felt like the unheralded trios division back when we had all these trios running around and having crazy ass matches with each other, and then everyone was clamoring for trios titles. Then we get the trios titles, and once they're off the Elite, I'm like, okay, where are all these great trios matches that we were? But so listen, get the titles off the Acclaimed, put them on Andretti and the Martins. Because that ruled. By the way, big reaction, hometown reaction for Dante, who was eating this up. Like, this kid was hungry. He was like, I'm back and I'm really pissed. I'm sick of being injured. Here we go. Tremendous stuff. Like, honestly, tremendous stuff. If this is what we're going to get moving forward for trios, I'm all for it. The Hardys did their work, did their part perfectly here. And I feel like they're done trying to work above their ability now. Where doing really crazy ass things and super acrobatic things is just not in their ability anymore. It's not, they're just not capable of doing it anymore, right? But no, listen. If this is what we're going to do with trios matches moving forward, please give me more. We have, and then after the match, Dante gets the win here. He gets the pinfall win using his finisher thing. And after the match, there's a backstage segment where the winners of the match are right there. And then Penta rolls in and he goes one, two, three. And he goes one, goes two. Commander shows up, three. Vikingo shows up. And this is going to be what, like a Rampage match? Let's go. Rampage is for sickos. That's all there is to it. I'm excited about this. Starting to get close to going over time here. Get an AEW TBS title match. House rules. Julia Hart defeated Emi Sakura. The house rule was by Emi. Emi, who says, no submissions. No submission wins. Cannot win by submission. Why? Because Julia Hart's finisher is a fucking submission. Now, does this make sense? Yes, I think this is probably the smartest house rule stipulation I've heard so far since the House of Black started doing it. You have a submission. You have a wrestler whose finisher is a submission. Well, can't win via submission. Boom! That makes sense. There wasn't like, Brody King cannot be at ringside. Who cares? Whatever. This ruled. And another good match, buoyed by Sakura, who eventually she is going to get like the 100% like team rub here from the fans. We're going to be like, yeah, it's tremendous stuff. Thank you, Emmy. Thank you, Emmy. Clap, clap. All of that shit. She's going to get it because she's too good. I think she carried Julia to probably Julia's best match. Julia ate shit in this match. She's eating double underhook slams and Emmy even like she repositions herself on the final moonsault that Julia Hart does because Julia I think undershot it. And Emmy rolled just a little bit. She scooched just a little over to make sure that the moonsault looks good. That's what happens when you work with a general. That's what happens when you work with someone who knows what the fuck they're doing and can guide greener wrestlers into this type of situation. This was, you know, I'm not going to herald this as the greatest match of all time. This was good. This was good. Julia Hart ate shit. She had the comeback. She retained her title with a moonsault. And then finally, we'll talk about, because we already talked about the main event earlier, Christian Cage coming to the ring. He's got security with him. He calls Adam Copeland out over and over and over. You know, in the truck, just start up his music. You know what he was saying? Copeland finally comes out. And Christian, once Adam Copeland is in the ring, he shoos security away. He's like, no, let's talk. And then he starts talking because he's being reflective. Because they're not going to make it to Montreal for the match he challenged him to. Because they're going to be reflective. Right? Let's not forget, Copeland Concerto, both Nick Wayne and Killshot. Don't get it confused, Christian. Sidebar. Tremendous that the audience got all over Christian for fucking up and calling him Luchasaurus. They dove at his neck like a pack of wolves. And that's the kind of heat you want from an audience when you're a heel, where the slightest fuck up has everyone just like going, hey, that was tremendous. Anyway, he's being reflective, he being Christian Cage, and he puts over moments from their past. He doesn't care that Adam Copeland grew up with a single mom and not having a father. And I'm going this and I'm like, oh shit. But no, Christian subverts our expectations here. He says, I'm not suggesting to be your father because we're brothers. And my father became your father. He roots for you. You'd sleep over. You'd be at the dinner table with us. We weren't two random guys working together. We love each other. And my dad loves you. He's still your biggest fan. And when Copeland's mom passed away a few years ago, that was the hardest time of Copeland's life. So he said he'd like, and he remembers that Judy, her name is Judy, right? Christian says, I remember Judy saying that she would have liked to have seen us wrestle one last time together. We should do this for Judy. And I am eating all of this up. I'm like, look at this disingenuous, absolute piece of shit who is sitting here dredging up the past, trying to get emotional because he lost his support circle, right? Because he lost Killswitch, because he lost Nick Wayne. Now he's all alone and he's afraid because he's a disingenuous, cowardly piece of shit. He's the greatest. And you think this company needs to tell stories with, you know, cuckoo crazy vignettes and black and white imagery and what the... No! This story of Christian Cage being a piece of shit has been a tremendous story that Christian Cage has been telling for months. So Copeland sort of takes a moment to think. And of course, Christian gears up to clock him with the TNT title. But guess what? Copeland sees it coming, kicks him in the no-nos, and then, you know, basically tells him that he's coming for him next week. Oh, and by the way, go fuck yourself, which the censor censored like 7 seconds after the word. Like, whoops, someone's finger slipped on the button on that one. Yep. Whoop. Yep. And of course, this is a mirror of Copeland's first promo in AEW, right? This is exactly it. It's a mirror image. Well, was it the first, or at least his first promo with Christian with the go fuck yourself line? Roles reversed. Edge was doing exactly that. He was going, oh, but Christian, remember our past together, you know, and I wanted to ride off with my buddy into the sunset. Christian was like, and now Christian, because he's a chicken shit son of a bitch, he's like, nah, we're buddy buddies, we're chums, we're pals. Tremendous stuff. Color me surprised to be excited for an Adam Copeland match in 2023. But I mean, a lot of it has to do with Christian Cage, and I am in complete confidence with Christian Cage in this match because he gets it, and he might be able to curb Copeland's worst instincts. We'll see next week. The match is happening in Montreal, just a 2.5 hour drive from where I live. I don't know. I really want to go. It's going to depend on a couple of things. One of those being the weather. If it's a really weird time of year, if snowstorms pop out of nowhere. But if everything's clear, I just might be in the Bell Center to watch this next Wednesday. But I don't know. I'm not making any promises, and I'm not making promises to myself. No, and I didn't buy a ticket yet. I'm going to buy it last minute. I think that's what you do with AEW tickets these days. That's a whole other discussion. But as for now, all of this discussion, and we're going to wrap it up on this tremendous episode of Dynamite. This very good, exciting, fun, on the right path of restoring the feeling show, right? And look what was missing. Look at everything that was missing. And look at how good the show was. No Roderick Strong, no giraffes. We did get MJF, but you know, no bro chachos, no calling Adam Cole in the background, show long skits following people backstage. Goddamn, look at this. You focus on the pro wrestling, you give us the pro wrestling, you make things happen outside in the ring, and people get excited about it. Huh? Ain't that weird how that works? And a great crowd. A crowd that resembled an AEW crowd on top of that. I'm going to leave it at that for now. Thank you again. If you haven't already, leave a like on the video or a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, 5-star rating on Spotify. I will be back on Sunday for the Collision review. I'm going to keep on down this Collision, Continental Classic watch for the... we're going to be back with the Blue League. Should be a big week for the Blue League. I'm excited for that. But in the meantime, have a great rest of your week. And I'll see you next time.